This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Together with Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, the show tries to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and frameworks, the better to understand how society works. Each week, we discuss a classic text or an idea, or have somebody, as we do this week, in with us to shed light on the world around you. Fuad is not here with me, but instead, I have Professor Harry Harun Baer. He is involved in educational sciences and Islamic studies. Because we rarely discuss on this show people who are actually in the business of thinking through things and writing, we often talk to, or about rather, thinkers who are long dead, or we refer to text. So it's always interesting to have the person in front of us, the body, the living body, and the embodiment of certain ideals, perhaps, or ideas. Now, can I ask you, how did you come to get yourself involved in Islamic studies? Were you born a Muslim yourself?
No, I was born a Jew of Jewish parents who had converted to Christianity. So I have a multi-religious background, but I was educated in philosophy and arts and theater, because my mother was a dancer in the ballet and my father was a journalist writing on cultural affairs. So I was brought up as a young boy, being taught by my father to read between the lines and by my mother to watch the movements of the people. Both taught me that behind the things you see, there's a truth which is you can grasp but which you cannot see. You cannot see it with your eyes, but you can grasp it with your heart. So when I got the chance to live in Jakarta as a 16-year-old boy, I was schooled there. I lived with an Indonesian family. It was my first contact with a Muslim society. It was in the midst of Ramadan of 1979. And I, at the instant, got attracted by the vivid and humane culture of living Islam and living Muslims. So I emerged into this Muslim culture, the sound of the prayer call and the beauty of the mosques, the smell of iftar in Ramadan, and the cordiality of the people and the spirituality, because my parent home was very intellectual. And secondly, I got the chance, because I picked up good Arabic in my school in Jakarta, to read Quran. And I fell in love with this book. So at the age of 17, I decided to embrace Islam and I said Shahada, starting my life as a Muslim.
Now, you said your family was very intellectual. Yes. Do you mean by that it was non-religious, very rational in its approach to thinking through issues? Not to suggest that the religious is not rational, but yeah. Do you know where I'm going with this? Yeah. The idea of a European society increasingly secular and de-Christianizing.
Yeah. My parents taught me to be critical towards ideologies. And to them, formatted religion in terms of institutions and traditions and teachings, I think was a kind of ideology. So they taught me also to be critical towards the Catholic Church and whatever arguments there would be from the religious sides. My parents were exposed to criticism, of course, because of their profession, being a dancer in the theater and so on. But they were not negative towards spirituality and religiousness of the people. But for them, it was focused to the individual and not to the system. So I embraced Islam not because I was so impressed by the Majlis Ulama in Indonesia, but because the voice I heard, the dialogue between me and the book, the Quran. And yes, I think there was some emotional side which I had been missing throughout my education, like trusting. It's good to be critical about ideology, but to some extent you have to trust something and somehow and somebody. And I started like learning, okay, there's a truth behind, but there's somebody you can trust in, which would be God, I believe. I use the term God instead of Allah. I have my reasons to do so as a Muslim. And therefore, I did something. I embraced Islam to the disappointment of my mother, but my father, he agreed. He said, it's good, you found your harbor. It's good for you, but do it right.
Now, a lot of people embrace religions It's a very personal choice, and they practice it in private. Yeah. But from what I understand about you, you've also come to talk about Islam and religion and the place of it in a secular society or within a constitutional framework. You've come to actually actively think about religion.
Yes.
And that's there's a move there. How did you go from accepting this as a private, personal choice to now wanting to be engaged in public discussions about religion?
Yes, I think it has to do with being a convert. So I wanted others to share my ideas and feelings and convictions. So there were years in the 1980s I returned to Germany. I was very active in the Muslim movement, like the Da'wah propagation of Islam. And so that's a phase you go through as a youngster. But then when I became a teacher in elementary and middle school, I predominantly had classes who were packed with Muslim migrant children. And I learned to understand their situation, that they have a spiritual curiosity, but their social surroundings, the migrant workers from Turkey, they regard Islam as a kind of cultural capsule. You're inside or outside. But the second or third generation of youngsters is half integrated, half not. So one leg is in the capsule and the other is outside. And they got slammed in between the door. So with their questions they had about understanding their own spiritual heritage, they could not turn to the imam in the mosque. He would speak only Turkish to them. They would not turn towards their parents because they were not really affiliated towards religion. So they would turn to me as a teacher. I wrote my doctoral thesis about this. I did a tough analysis on the situation of young Muslims in public schools. Then I was summoned by the ministry to do some curriculum design for spiritual education for Muslims. I made the proposal to the government to implement this in public schools. They did it. It was a parliamentary discussion I was invited to. Now we are in an experimental situation in Bavaria. We have about 300 schools with this Islamic spiritual education going on, reaching about 70,000 Muslim pupils in Germany.
Now, this PhD thesis, was it done within the discipline of theology, or was it a social scientific study?
That's a good question. Actually, it was the pedagogics of Islam, a subject we don't have in German universities. So I am one of the borderliners in scientific landscape, where I combine the sociology of religion, theology as a system predominantly influenced by the churches, so the technique of theology, and pedagogics. So I had three professors who were accompanying my academic process, and I had a very tough examination then, because they said, you're creating a new subject, so we must be very, very strict in what you are doing here. So actually I invented the branch of Islamic pedagogics, which you would call Tarbiyat al-Islamiyya or Tazkiyat al-Islamiyya, in the German university. I was the first one to do so.
Well, was this a tradition that existed outside of the German context? I mean, you just mentioned phrases that are Arabic in nature.
Yes.
So was it already something existing?
Not really. You have the so-called Tarbiyah faculty in Islamic universities, which is, broadly speaking, education. But they turn towards education as a system of governance. It's the system of education, the schooling, the curricula, and so on. I'm more or less talking about a philosophy of education, an anthropology of education. And we have a lack of philosophical-based ideas of education in Islam. It's all about managing Islam as a body of teaching, the do's and don'ts in everyday life. So the more do's and don'ts a child learns, the better Muslim it will be. But that's a misconception of religion and a misconception of Islam. Islam has a rich philosophical tradition. It has a sociological tradition, if you talk about Ibn Khaldun, for example. So I see it a little bit as my task to revive our own Muslim traditions in terms of philosophy, and in terms of understanding society and understanding the humanities studies within Islam, And I did not find very much partners outside Germany in Muslim countries. Some in Indonesia, yes, for sure. Some in Islamabad, for example, at the National University. But all these were Western-educated professors who returned to their home countries. So it's something new.
So you took that study philosophical and in nature, but also had a programmatic dimension to it. You said that you took that, you actually made recommendations based on it. Very few people who do PhDs end up influencing policy.
Yes.
And so what does that turn? I mean, to go from the philosophical to the programmatic?
Because on the side of the government, the provincial government has the mandate on cultural politics and education. It's not the national. We don't have national curricula. They felt the need that we need to do something for our Muslim pupils, because their school results were bad. They were under average. They were hard to be integrated into society. They had a higher rate of criminal offenses. Something should have done, and that was linked to them being as Muslims. And I told the government, no, Islam is not the problem. The migration and background is the problem. Islam can be part of the solution if you address them on the basis of their own identity and you speak in the language they understand. And language understand, I don't mean Turkish. I mean the ideas they have, the dreams they have, the conceptions they have, and they were fed with during the socialization in the families. If you don't want to lose that generation to obscure ideas, you should feed them some Islam, but it should be a good way of teaching them Islam, helping them to generate a strong personality and identity. And then came 9/11. And all my proposals who were on the desks of the political decision makers, like, yeah, that's a good idea, but let's talk about it tomorrow, suddenly became very, very vibrant because, oh, what are we going to do with the Muslims in our country? And there was this idea of having, where's this Hari Harun Bear? And there I was summoned, and then suddenly they started listening seriously. They hadn't listened for so many years seriously. You know, they said, okay, they have to decide they want to be Turkish or Germans. It's not a religious issue. I said, to them, religion is a cultural issue, and it is combined to their national and cultural identities. So if you want to strengthen them being good Germans, you need Islamic education for them. And
were you slightly suspicious, when politicians suddenly take interest and it's out of this global Islam as a religion of terror kind of framing?
Yes, I myself have been labeled as a sleeper in the social networks. Like, he's a I have a fundamentalist biography, but something I don't really like to talk about. I know how these, for example, Salafist Muslims, how they think and what they feel. I know it precisely because I can feel it in my belly and not only in my head. I was very suspicious. And then the Ministry of Interior Affairs would summon up the so-called Islam Conference, which is a German Muslim conference, just to give some treatment to Muslims in terms of homeland security. And I warned against it. I told them, don't drink from that cup. Yeah. I was known to be critical about it, so they never summoned me as a member because they knew I would refuse. So we have some ceasefire now, but I'm still very critical in my publications against this integrational policies.
You're listening to Professor Hari Harun Bear. He works in educational sciences and Islamic studies. He's visiting Malaysia at the invitation of the Global Movement of Moderates, as well as the Association for the Promotion of Human Rights, on a consultation on the promotion and protection of freedom of religion or belief in ASEAN. Next up, we'll talk more about his philosophical work, his PhD work, and the notion of culture that he mentioned earlier. I'm Sharad Kutan. You're listening to Night School on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, and Night School continues. We have our guest, Professor Harry Harun-Behr. He works in educational sciences and Islamic studies. We were talking earlier about your PhD, which became in a particular kind of historical context, a program for dealing with a community, a minority community, both ethnically and religious. And you said something quite fascinating. You said to think of Islam not as a religion, but as the issue of culture. And I wonder if you could just clarify what that means.
To my mind, religion needs a cultural framing. There is no other way to express something like a religion as a way of life, a way of living. But cultural and religion are not identical, but they are identified. So the average Turkish Muslim in Germany would say, Germans are Christian and Turkish are Muslims, and that's good. You're over that field of part of the soccer field, and we are here. You are the white color, we are the blue color. So when a student asked me, Harry, are you German or are you Muslim? I looked at her a little bit bluntly as I told her both, and she said, there can't be. Either you're German or you're Muslim. For her, being Muslim means being a Turk, and being a German means being a Christian. So Muslims say Allah and Germans say God. She said, I heard you talking about God and then you used the word Allah. So I got confused. What is your religion? I said, it's a question of vocabulary and it's a question of language and it's a question of culture, cultural habits. We have a code switch between God and Allah. Among German-speaking Muslims. And I know that this code switch, when Muslims tend to speak among themselves, they would prefer the word Allah. If they speak in public, they would prefer the word God. Because to average Germans, the word Allah has an oriental design. And Muslims in Germany don't want to be oriental. Yeah? They are occidental. So they decide to use the word God instead of Allah. But still, how do you want to express religion without religious culture? Who wants to eat a chicken curry without the spices inside? It doesn't taste. So we have different spices, but it's still the same chicken we are cooking. So I encourage my students to practice Islam on the grounds of their cultural backgrounds. And they are different among Arab Muslims or Turkish origin or Bosnian or Albanian or American or Swedish Muslims or French Muslims. Among my students, they have all the nationalities. But there should be clear about what the difference is between cultural habit. I had a girl in a classroom. She came up to me and said, Harry, is it true that in Quran it's written that the father may beat his daughter? I said, no. It is forbidden. Parents don't beat their children. You don't do it. The Prophet never did it. You don't give a slap to your children. You don't do it. So I asked her what happened. She didn't answer because she was ashamed. But obviously she had received some physical treatment by her parents, which happens at rife among our migrant families. So she was looking for some orientation. Is it a cultural habit of my father or is it a truth in Islam? And this goes on and on, asking about sexual orientation, asking about the freedom of expression, asking about, am I allowed to choose the profession I want to learn, or do my parents have a word and say, you're going to be a mechanic and you're going to be whatever? How obedient do I have to be towards my parents? Is it allowed for me to date my German friend? Does my husband have to be a Muslim if I have a Christian friend who behaves more like a Muslim than all the Muslim males I know who behave like animals, you know? So it's more about Islam as a value system, a system of conduct, of what in Arabic you call Ummat al-Islamiyya, a community of people who behave like Muslims, not Ummat al-Muslimin, a community of people who are members of a club. You see, and Islam in its merge was an answer towards problems that had arisen among religious communities. And today Muslims tend to copy these problems actually Islam wanted to abolish, like religious identity and national tribal identity and cultural identity is the same.
But are those impulses so deep? I mean, some people will say they're primal. Maybe it's kind of journalistic shorthand that we might dismiss. But
yes.
The idea that clubs provide protection, whereas values, you might live them, you might feel good about them, but they don't necessarily give you protection.
Yes, that's true what you say. But then the clubs should stick to their own rules, which they obviously don't. They turn out to be political or social pressure groups. A migrant worker interest group is not a religious community. Just by chance, they all tend to be Muslims. But Spanish migrant organizations are predominantly Christian. But they don't raise the Christian issue in Germany. So there's something unique in Muslim thought about ethnicity and cultural identity being identical with Muslim. I think it's something that the Turkish version of a Malay problem.
The collapsing of ethnicity with
right,
religious affiliation
right.
with language in this country.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's an effect of globalization and secular societies that people tend towards a new kind of tribalism. And the Muslim kind of tribalism is something I'm afraid of, because it's very exclusivistic towards even inner Muslim dissident thought. So religious communities like the Turkish religious communities in Germany, they define themselves as Ahlu Sunnah wa Jama'ah. Not regarding that Ahlu Sunnah wa Jama'ah is a postmodern construction of ideological Islam. It's not even a school of thought, you see. So we have the problem that Muslim thinking tends to be more and more narrow today, based on lesser and lesser and fewer information, but on a maximum of opinion. And so the Muslim Islam-inspired reconstructions of social realities turn out to be fascist ideologies in the end. It's a dangerous situation. Like, take Sharia courts. I don't want to be under a Sharia court rule, really. I wouldn't like to. I mean, nobody likes to. To many Muslims, Sharia is a system of Islamic law. But it's a misconception of our own Islamic heritage. Sharia is not Islamic law. Sharia is about Muslims under the rule of law. Sharia is also the state under the rule of law. Sharia is talking about norms and methods. And it is not specifically Islamic in terms of Muslim communities. But if you have like a Sharia system aside of a secular public system of law courts, you have a first class and second class jurisdiction in a country. It should only be one. And then the secular law court should summon up Sharia expertise whenever it is needed. Otherwise, you tend to Islamicize problems that have a sociological or economical basis, but not a religious. And we Muslims should not Islamicize problems that actually we do not have, or Islam is not responsible for, but the economic situation or the social situation. So I'm very critical about some developments, for example, in Malaysia.
Yeah. Now, before we get into the Malaysian situation, I wonder if, you know, intellectually, somebody who comes from this multiple or dual religious heritage, Jewish and Christian, growing up as a European in a kind of post-war European context, a deep suspicion for ideology and such,
yes.
Does that shape the way you think about Islam? Is your taking on of Islam, was the modality of your conversion a very European one? And have you continued to think like a European about your religion?
I think you are right. According to religious science, conversions always tend to be incomplete. But sometimes I'm being addressed by conservative Muslims in Germany who say, okay, you talk so freely because you have embraced Islam as a young boy. You haven't sucked it in with the mother milk. And I tell them, okay, so I'm like Muhammad. He was not born a Muslim. Yeah, he, so to say, embraced Islam, and all the Ashab and all the fellow Muslims, everybody was a convert at that time. And Muhammad said that conversions tend to be incomplete, because he said, if you're a funny person and you convert to Islam, you're going to be a funny Muslim. Yeah. So still we have our traits, our first socializations that stick to us. And that is necessary to establish a European Muslim identity and to have a European voice or a German voice, because Islam in Germany is different from other countries. It is dominated by the migrant situation. So we have some kind of clash of cultures among German Muslims who come from, who are third generation Muslims from Algerian or Turkish migrant workers, but feel to be Germans, but have different cultural affiliations. This makes it very vivid and very open, and we have very intensive learning processes among our Muslims.
Yeah. What would be the contribution of German discourse about Islam to Islam in general, internationally, and in fact to all religious thinking and, you know, to religious discourse as such, you know, applied to the question of secularism, to dealing with pluralism, accepting, say, you know, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a standard to which religious communities must adhere, all those things that are sources of conflict today when it comes to religion, whether it's Islam or Christianity, Judaism or whatever.
Well, picking up human rights, we have the problem that Western democratic countries who very much and intensely propagate human rights do not stick to their own standards. So the criticism from the Muslim world, and not only from the Muslim world, Latin America also, African states, is very, very well funded. To pick up, let's say, secular state and humanism, I was brought up under a secular regime, so to say, a democracy. And I enjoyed the freedom of choosing my religion, of the education I had. My parents enjoyed the freedom. And I think secular rule and the standards of secular governments are guarantee to the most possible extent religious freedom in a plural, a religiously heterogeneous society. Muslims in some countries tend to be the suppressed majority. This is some of the self images you listen. That's rubbish, really. That's nonsense. Recently, I heard that of a prominent figure that humanism is a threat towards Islam. Western colleagues would say that Islam is a threat to humanism. I mean, both are wrong. Islam is humanistic. I think the teachings of Muhammad were an answer to inhumane situations. And Quran does not want every man to be Muslim, but every Muslim to behave as a human. Islam, to me, is a system of values, attitudes, and of qualitative standards of behavior. And we have much more, much stronger parallels between, let's say, the Declaration of Human Rights and Islam than, for example, the Catholic Church and human rights. But you have a strong criticism of Christian organizations and the Catholic Church towards the Declaration of Human Rights. We should not behave like Catholics. We are Muslims. We don't have problems with the Declaration of Human Rights, actually. It could be an Islamic invention if it had not been invented by others. We should not forget, besides that, the strong influence of Islamic philosophy in the time of European Renaissance, which was the birthplace of humanism. Without Islamic philosophy in Al-Andalus and Ibn Rushd and Ibn Arabi, there would not be humanism in Europe. So why should we deploy ourselves of our own heritage?
What's interesting, of course, is, you know, what it's compelling on one level. You know, you invoke a certain history, a certain intellectual lineage that people could embrace and see value in it. But there is, and I don't think this is something peculiar to Muslims, a real resistance to these things. I mean, there is a resistance to human rights. In fact, the person who articulated that issue of human rights and humanism, it was none other than our prime minister. Where do you think that's coming from? Why is there deep suspicion Is it purely political and opportunistic, or is there in fact something philosophical or theological about this idea that there could be a man-made law that is supreme to a God and his pronouncements about the world and how people should behave? If we put aside the question of political opportunism, are we left with still something, philosophical or religious resistance to the idea of human rights?
Yes, you're right. But then I would follow Habermas, Jürgen Habermas, who said, if you want to shape philosophical ideas, have a discourse on it, you need a discourse or exchange of shared experiences and interests. And I think if you look at those countries who violently propagate human rights, especially the United States of America, and their behavior and their attitude towards the Islamic world, just to use this paraphrase, I think Muslim experience is somewhat not so positive towards the so-called West. And then you start thinking it over and say, what is our own roots? Do we have an alternative system? I mean, even in Quran, the law is man-made and not from God. God does not give laws. He gives rules and normative standards. We are summoned up to shape it into a form of society that is not indoctrinaire and that is Sharia in terms of, like Mahmoud Shaltut in Egypt put it in the 70s, make the way towards God easy. And as Aisha said, don't impel law and punishment on our brothers and sisters. But as a reaction towards human rights and humanism as a political ideology, it may evoke an Islamist view as the counter ideology, yeah, as a Muslim state with a better solution in terms of an Islamic definition of humanity and anthropology. And if this gets mixed up with the success in business, like being a prosperous country, and you feel like earning the fruits of your labor as a Muslim country, so you're in favor of God somehow, I don't know, then this is a very intrigue kind of new Islamist capitalism, so to say.
It's like the Protestant ethic. It's like
that
Max
is
Weber's
like you're Calvinist Muslims then, yeah?
Yes, yeah? Yes.
Okay, so you should be a little bit more critical about, you're right, it has a philosophical basis and it needs philosophical discourse. It should include all the members of a society. And it should not be led by Muslims and non-Muslims inclusively and exclusively. It should be led among citizens of a region, of a country like in ASEAN or in Malaysia. Because I think solutions towards problems cannot be Islamic in terms of a system. They can be Islamic in terms of the values and normative standards. And you find a lot of Islamic normative standards in other ethnic or religious groups. We just have to recollect them and share them. And this is easier in a secular country. Actually, it is.
Paradoxically.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you finally for a recommendation in terms of reading. Where do you think the most interesting ideas are coming from? Or is there a book that we could read possibly about religion and society? I mean, it doesn't have to be about Islam, but that works through these issues, the difference between, your self-perception, belief and the institutions and such. Where would we go to find some clarity about the kind of distinctions that we need to make when thinking about these issues?
I would suggest to read Rodney Stark, religious scientists, who points toward the functional aspects of religion, how religion works, not as a system, but as a sociological phenomenon. I would advise to read Luhmann, Niklas Luhmann or Luckmann and Berger, who were writing about visible and invisible religion and religiousness. So from them, you have a differentiation between religious systems and the religiosity of people. and José Casanova, who is a very famous scientist. He's now in the States. He's fluent in German and Spanish. He warns against the confessionalistic reconstruction of Islam, especially, who is based on personal denomination and not on a confessionalistic system. So Germany tends towards making a kind of Muslim church out of German Muslims, using the infrastructure of church-like organization. That will slow down and inhibit the spiritual dynamics we have in our Muslim social clusters. And he is one of the scientists who has the empirical data for it. And I would still advise to read the classical treatments of Ibn Khaldun, Al-Jahith from Basra, or even the famous Ibn Rushd, or Ibn Arabi's treatise on love in Islam, because in Ibn Arabi's philosophy on the concept of love, he unconsciously strengthens the idea of the individual and individual responsibility and on an individual way of communicating and bringing oneself into society. We have a rich Islamic heritage, and we have a very good scientists today, Muslims and non-Muslims. I mean, there's no such labeling as Islamic science or non-Islamic science, to my mind. So I regard myself primarily as a scientist and then as a Muslim. Like José Casanova, Rodney Stark, Michael Pye, functionalizing systems of religion, asking, okay, what is religious narration? What are rites? What is philosophical? What is cultural, for example? Where is religion a form of language of expressing oneself? And how does this form personal identity? So I would not use the term religious identity. That's a political term. Yeah, personal identities.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Harry, are you on Facebook?
I'm not.
Okay, so we can't get the people who listen to Night School to communicate with you on Facebook. But perhaps if they write to us at our Gmail, we have bfmnightschool@gmail.com, we could forward, you know, their comments and questions to you, and we could forward that to you if you don't mind.
You're welcome. That's what my students in Germany do, writing emails. I have a question, and I answer them. Sometimes I publish my answers in our magazine, which I issue together with my students.
Is your magazine online?
It's online, yeah. Mm. It's on my homepage.
What would be the address?
It's called Zeitschrift für die Religionslehre des Islam. It's a German expression. It's a magazine on the teaching of Islam. It's on www.izir.de, I-Z-I-R. That is the abbreviation of Interdisciplinary Center of Islamic Religion, and it's online, but it's in German, so maybe it's a hard time for your listeners to decipher it.
Well, but it's good to know it's out there, and but you've given us a list of books that are fascinating. Thank you so much again for joining us. You can get me on Twitter. I'm at Sharad Kutin. But join us next week on Night School. You've been listening to Professor Harry Harun Bear. He's an educational scientist and works in Islamic studies as well from Germany. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
You've been listening to Night School, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.